Hello and welcome to our bonus Q&A for Kit and Krista podcast episode seven. Ooh, I got hung up there for a second. Seven.
Whoa, I remember now after the fact, which is not helpful.
But. These numbers may become a problem, but I also don't know what to do about it.
What else to do? Yeah, time will keep marching on, and so will these episodes.
Right, right.
Kind of a little special thing in this week's bonus Q&A is a question we're going to ask ourselves, which is about the Zelda delay.
Well, we joked about, you know, I was like, oh, there's some other podcasts that are holding their episodes because there might be some news. And we scoffed at that.
We're like, bah, we would never do such a thing.
Now I'm going to scoff at myself for being a fool.
Well, good thing we have these fun bonus Q&As where we could talk about this kind of stuff with you guys. How cool is that? So
it is nice to just have another opportunity to make good on the gaffes of the week. So there were two big pieces of news. We can start with the Zelda news, which was, you know, they wouldn't call it a delay, but you know, that's really what it was.
Yes.
Game was originally coming out this holiday season. Now they're saying it's coming out this spring.
Yes.
You saw Mr. Aonuma with a snappy new hairstyle.
Yeah.
Couple
looking
little,
sharp.
Little clips of new footage that they sprinkled in there. What was your reaction to this news?
Not surprised at all, given sort of the background and sort of the relationships we've had with the Zelda team in the past, you know, and also just knowing Nintendo's philosophy about not being shy at all about delaying a game if it's not ready to go. You know, that's a pretty big like philosophy that's carried through all of the developers. Mr. Miyamoto is always saying this, you know, there's plenty of quotes of him out there saying that when a game is not ready, it will not be launched. So not surprised, but expecting, you know, a pretty massive game if it is delayed. That means the teams are working hard and probably putting a lot of cool stuff into the game. And I think it's fine. And it seems like the reaction from people generally is that it's fine with them too. They'll just, you know, they're happy to wait until the game is ready to be launched. So, yeah.
Yeah, it reminded me a bit of the announcement now from a couple years ago around Metroid Prime 4, where they were sort of starting over with that game. And,
that's,
you know,
right,
the feedback to that was really positive, was like, wow, thanks for being transparent and good luck. And, you know, we'll be ready. I think people maybe, it's nice to see people being so understanding about game delays. And I think there's, you know, so many examples of games like Cyberpunk where people got burned on a game that clearly wasn't ready. So I think people have those tangible examples of times where a delay, you know, can be good.
It could be better.
It's really nice to see that. And you know, I'm certainly not surprised at all. I have lost track of how many times the original Breath of the Wild was delayed. But when you have a game that's that big and that important, it's like, yeah, give it all the time you need.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But yeah, the new clips are looking great. I think I've seen just everybody dissect those clips to no end at this point. That's always fun. There's a lot of cute little details that people have been pointing out. So yeah, I'm sure it's going to be a fantastic game, and we'll just wait a little bit longer. There was this running joke too that I saw that made me laugh. That was like, is Elden Ring automatically game of the year because Zelda's delayed to 2023? And I definitely laughed. It's like, congratulations, you've just won game of the year.
Well, a few episodes ago, I was saying, you know, that 2017 Switch lineup's never going to be topped. And a lot of people came out and said, just you wait, 2022. And I said, well, believe it when I see it. And I'm still going to be waiting for that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
I did see some people saying like, oh, well, you know, might there be something new to kind of add to the lineup Zelda-wise to hold people over? Like, oh, is there, you
Wind
know,
Wind Waker
HD
Wind
or
Waker.
Twilight
Wind Waker.
Princess HD? I mean, this is not a super long delay. You know,
yeah,
spring
exactly.
is vague. You know, I imagine, again, the theme of the week is the fiscal year.
Fiscal year.
They would
it's
love to get
before.
It into that fiscal year.
It's going to be like early. My prediction in terms of date is going to be the first or second week of March. Of
March
year.
31st. Last
No,
<day.
laughs> no. I think they're not going to cut it that close. I feel like it's going to be the first second
yeah,
week of March.
Yeah. So I don't know if they need really anything else to like fill the time, because it's not that long, and there's all
no,
you know, there's
they
Pokemon,
need something.
There's Xenoblade. You know, who knows? There could be other stuff that, you know, hasn't been announced yet. So if I was them, I would not be too worried about filling that gap. But what do I know?
I disagree. I disagree. I feel like you got to keep the Zelda fans nice and happy and ready, primed for the next game. So I would love to see a remake on Switch. I mean, I've been tooting the Wind Waker horn for like ever now. So
well, that just assumes it's just ready to go. Done and ready to go.
How hard can it be?
Wow. We go from, wow, games is hard. Let's delay it to like, just turn it around. Crank it out.
A new game is hard.
Just do it. Just put it in the port machine and hit the button. And
yeah, hit the button
right
and the AI does the rest, right?
Oh, AI.
The
AI robots. Is here to save us
the
and also to kill us.
The robots will save the day and give us the Maker.
Let's move on to any reaction. So the PlayStation news was the one that we were anticipating. And they did sort of talk a little bit about
Spartacus.
New tiers of PlayStation Plus. There'd be two new tiers. I thought it was a little light on information, and it's obviously not going live immediately. I don't know if you thought otherwise. I kind of wanted a little bit more information. I wasn't immediately grabbed by one of those new tiers and thinking like, I need to have this.
Yeah, I felt the same way. It kind of reminded me, like, funnily enough, of, you know, how the Nintendo Switch Online stuff we were kind of talking about the other week, where, you know, it's weird that we don't have the sort of the transparency of what's all going to be available. And it's not great for someone who's trying to make a decision whether or not they want to pay extra for something to have this kind of drip fed to them. So it reminded me a little bit of that. You know, it definitely didn't give me enough info or incentive with the information that they did provide to like jump on right away. And, you know, we were talking about Game Pass and how like robust it is and how much content there is and how like basically how worth it is. I didn't get that sense from this, at least not now. So
the part of it that I'm especially interested in is the retro games. And, you know, there was no list of games included. There was also a bit of a lack of clarity around streaming these games versus actually downloading and playing these games. I'd like to know a little bit more about that. You know, there are third-party games that will be on. You just wonder, like, are these going to be the exact same games that are on Game Pass? Because I already have that, and that gets me all the first-party Xbox stuff. Yeah. So do I need that necessarily? And there were a number of interviews that they did with the head of PlayStation where he, you know, explained why they don't have their first party games on there. And again, I sort of, you know, reading through the lines on those is they need that money to sustain these crazy expensive games.
The production. Oh yeah.
And
you know that if they need the money, they need the money, you know, you can't really do anything about that. But yeah, it feels like what they have to offer now might not be worth it. So we'll just have to wait and see if there's anything else that comes out of this, I think, before
I feel like I can make a decision. A wait and see situation.
Exactly.
Well, let's jump into our questions. Again, we've got a hot dozen from our wonderful Patreon friends who are the wonderful people listening now. Let's just jump right in. First question is from Video Game Stupid. I had a question in the last Q&A. My question this week is, what is your preference? Do you prefer buying physical games or downloading them digitally? I prefer physical, but I guess I'm just old like that.
No, I don't think so. I think a lot of people, I think you prefer physical games, no?
I have really come around on digital games with the convenience factor. But if I had like an equal choice of one or the other, I would take the physical.
Yeah. I prefer digital games, actually. And I actually just have no choice now because everything that I have, like my PS5 is the digital only version. I did not have a choice to get the disc version in my quest for a PS5. So I do prefer, and I do like the convenience of a digital version. But I do love a good collector's edition. So, or like a special game or something like that, where you just really want to have that physical copy. So I really reserve my physical games to be like something that's more of a collector's thing nowadays. Yeah. And most of the games I have are digital.
I guess I see the physical game as like a safety net. In the case I don't like it, I have a way to like get rid of it and not feel like I completely wasted my money. Although I can't say
like
I've
reselling it,
Or giving it to somebody. It's just like, it's like, oh well, I downloaded this thing and I just deleted it and it's gone forever. It just feels like a waste. I can't say I have actually done that terribly recently with a physical game, but I think, again, in my messed up head, I just like the option.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that is sort of true, but maybe not so much nowadays, right? Like, I don't know if you would get a lot from an old physical game these days when everyone's going majorly.
Yeah, level, yeah. So. It is crazy how quickly, you know, this transition seems to be happening. That was something that we talked and thought about a lot at Nintendo of like, well, it seems like this might be the future, but when? And it's really accelerated, which is interesting to see.
Yeah, yeah, it is for sure.
Yeah. Next question from John Responte. Krista mentioned a few episodes ago that she loves dinosaurs. Have you played either of the Jurassic World Evolution games, and what other kinds of dinosaur-centric games would you like to see pop up in the future?
I have not played the Jurassic World games. Have you?
I have not. I've kind of looked at curious, those a though. Little bit. I'm a little yeah. curious about them, but yeah. no, I haven't played them.
Yeah, well, I want to... Do you think I would like them? The person that asked this question. The thing about dinosaur games or games with dinosaurs that I do feel like sometimes is missing is like you never get to play as the dinosaur.
Yeah.
You're always playing as the person taking down the dinosaur. So is in Jurassic World, is that, are you playing as the people or the dinosaur?
Yeah, that's my question about that game too, is like I'm a little unclear on what kind of a game it is. It seems to be you're like building up the theme park, but there are some more like hands-on parts to it. They kind of mm-hmm. like, I would love to just see like an open world game where you can choose what kind of dinosaur you want to be.
Yes.
Just like Elden Ring, but with dinosaurs. Like, wouldn't that right. be incredible?
That would be so cool. And then you could like get upgrades to like evolve your species.
Yes.
Your dinosaur species. Yeah, exactly. So I want to play as the dinosaur. I do have a funny dinosaur story, which was this game that you and I worked on in Nintendo, Fossil Fighters. You
remember oh, yeah.
that game? One of my favorite memories from that is we did like that, we did like a product mailing to media, and we encased the game in a piece of plaster that was shaped like a dinosaur footprint. And we included like a little chisel and hammer to, then they had to like basically chisel the game out of this like quote unquote like dinosaur bone or whatever. I thought that was really fun.
It was the high point of my career.
High point of your career.
Yeah, but come on, come on, game developers, get on this. Dino games. Yeah. Question from Jason E. This question is for Kit. What are your thoughts on Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Games? Have you ever played one of those games? I have played it not in great depth. Like, you know, Nintendo published some of those games, so I needed to become somewhat familiar with them. But believe it or not, not a fan. It just felt like Mario could do better than hitching his wagon to Sonic. It's like, well, you got this great cast of Mario and the Mario characters and the Mario universe. And I was like, oh, these Sonic guys are here too.
You also don't really like the Olympics to begin with either.
That is true.
You're not a huge Olympic fan. You're not like every 4 years you got to watch the Olympics. Yeah. So it's sort of a double, like no
double
thanks
whammy
for you.
Of apathy and disdain.
And disdain. Oh, gosh. Ooh, that sounds like a bad a recipe for a disaster here.
So, yeah, there's the answer to that. Rob, throughout your time in games media, what were your best and worst first impressions of people you've met? I'm a bit unclear about the point of games media, so I think I can just broaden this to everybody.
Oh.
I don't know.
Take
if
it down.
Was a, no, I don't know if it was a worst impression. I did have a dicey encounter when I was working at Konami with Hideo Kojima that we will go into depth on in another episode. I can't say I've had a lot of bad impressions of people. I think most people in the industry are pretty nice and good people.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think I've had many just like horrible experiences. I think generally, we think we talked about this a little bit as well. The industry, the gaming industry is actually very small. So if you sort of make a bad impression, I think you would be quickly unwelcomed in the gaming industry. So I think people are pretty aware of that in the industry and so that they generally are very nice and polite people.
What if we did a thing where we both say, we'll say our worst impression on three, the 1, 2, 3, and you said Kit and I said Krista on three.
And you said me. Yeah, that could happen. Yeah, that could happen. I would say that there was sometimes there's like awkward interactions because you are like, okay, this is a good example. Like we were doing a round of like media stuff or demos or product reviews or whatever for like We Fit, for example. So you would have to like do things with strangers that's kind of weird, like take your shoes off and weigh yourself and like shake your butt because you're hula hooping. And like, I don't
know. Reveal your BMI.
Revealing your, I have seen people's BMIs and I'm like, oh.
TMI on this BMI.
Way TMI. Yeah. So like there have been those kinds of like a little bit awkward, but not like someone was mean to me or like a jerk.
No, no.
But it's
no.
Just like, oh, this is a little weird. Like I just met you and now we're doing this together. Okay. But nothing bad.
I think the great impression. And again, there's so many, I think just Mr. Iwata, because again, like I never thought I would ever have a reason to interact with him because he is the big boss and I'm just, you know, some lackey. But again, we found ourselves strangely in a lot of meetings with him and having mm-hmm. real conversations. And he always seemed very eager to hear from us and very positive. Yeah. And I remember he had this thing where at the end of a meeting, he would go around the room and shake everybody's hand and thank them for their contributions, which is very genuine.
He's very, I think he's very thoughtful, like in everything, in the way that he thinks about like, quote unquote, the business, which sounds stupid, but also in the way that he thinks about how he treats somebody. And so, yeah, he would definitely do things like that. And he would always ask every single time in a meeting, like, what do you think? You know, he's always interested in hearing what, you know, someone else, not him, thinks about a situation. So I've always appreciated that as well.
Yeah. Mike J. Chin has a question. Have you ever been to any video game orchestra concerts? I enjoyed Zelda's Symphony of the Goddesses tour. Well, guess what? So did we.
Let me tell you. Yes, of course we have been to many video game symphonies. Kit and I both worked very closely on, quote-unquote, orchestrating the Zelda Symphony that you saw and enjoyed. So that's great that you enjoyed
it. How many times did you end up seeing that show? I think I saw it 3 or 4 times. I can't remember.
I think I did it like 6 times probably.
Whoa!
Yeah, I was on like the tour with them for a while.
Oh my gosh.
You know, which was really fun. I mean, it was great. I did not get sick of that at all. We worked really hard on that show tied to the 25th Zelda anniversary, which was really cool. But yeah, I wish there were more of those. You know, there is such beautiful music in video games. I feel like sometimes it's not as popular as like movie music or, you know, or other like forms of entertainment. So I do wish that there were more opportunities for video game symphonies.
Have you been to any other like non-Zelda ones? I haven't, but I know you've been to a number of these sorts of like pop culture-y symphonies.
Yeah, I have. I went to a few here in San Francisco where they would like have like video game. I think which one did I go to? There was one here that was like Final Fantasy, I think, or just like a Square Enix kind of repertoire, which was kind of cool. But there's also like some of the movie ones too. I went to like the Ghostbusters one, which was really fun. But yeah, I do wish there were more of these. I know it's hard to like put these together, but yeah, these are
Square. Square Enix does seem to be the company that best recognizes the value of their music and, you know, tries to do a lot of different stuff with it, which is very cool.
Yeah, exactly. And they have that YouTube channel that we were talking about
with
all of their soundtracks. And I mean, iconic music, and I'm glad that they're popularizing it.
Next question from Real Blue Toad. Was there ever a Nintendo game you felt that you played that you just didn't feel was worked on well and felt lazy and didn't do justice to its series? You know, I think that was one of the things that struck me coming to Nintendo from other parts of the industry is like, you don't need to worry about the quality of most games. You know, 99% of the time, it's definitely a good to great situation. Whereas, you know, when I worked at Konami or Namco, there were definitely times where it's like, oh, this game's going to bomb in the reviews. We need to be careful mm-hmm. with this. So I don't have a great answer for this.
Well, I've only worked at Nintendo, so my standards are extremely high. And I feel like that's just, it's not like a, you know, it's not fair, maybe, because I'm just so used to these like crazy, ridiculously high quality, award-winning AAA Nintendo
games. Spoiled.
I'm spoiled. So I feel like when I don't get that from Nintendo, I'm extremely disappointed. Like I'm just like even worse off than someone like you who probably was like, well, even that like kind of, you know, C plus game is like an A from your previous days. So I have an answer for this. And it is the 3DS version of Paper Mario, Paper Mario Sticker Star. I thought that was probably the worst game in the franchise.
Yeah.
And again, it's one of those situations where this is a really, I mean, there was such a strong start with this franchise, so much opportunity and just like so much promise to make it great. But instead it was this like sort of gimmicky, almost in some areas unplayable game that just didn't live up to my expectations for the franchise. But again, I have like very skewed high expectations now, so maybe that's just me, but I remember being like getting like halfway through that game and just like almost like rage quitting out of it because I was like, this is bad.
That game, but I can't say I loved it.
Yeah, there was one level with the poison wiggler swamp where I was like, no.
Yeah, it feels like most of the time, and you know, we talked about this on the last episode, it's like more of these franchises are just on cruise control rather than mm-hmm. they're, you know, crashing and
being
burning.
Thought about, yeah.
Just so it seems like it's not a cop-out, I will give an example from elsewhere in my career. I worked on the Splatterhouse game for PS3 and Xbox 360 at Namco. And Splatterhouse is a pretty, you know, cool old series, and I was excited that they were bringing it back. And the early stuff we were seeing of that game looked really neat, but it just didn't really progress past that early point, mm-hmm. and it just felt like it never improved. And, you know, that was a pretty poorly reviewed game, and a lot of kind of tricky stuff went on with the development of that game. You can look it up. Like, there was a dispute between Namco and the developer that was working on it. So sort of a bit of a cursed project there. And that was just a bummer because that felt like it had some potential. All right. This is a non-gaming question.
Oh.
Espars 50. Kit and Krista, what is your guys' dream car to have?
Oh, man. That's not a good question for us. I don't think either of us are super, like, car people.
I do have an answer that I guarantee will surprise you. I think it's something we have never talked about.
Oh, my gosh. Hit me.
But yes, I am not a car guy at all. I drive a pretty old Prius, and I'm quite happy with that.
Yeah.
I think, though, this is just a completely impractical car that I don't know if I would actually like to have in real life, but maybe for like a weekend or something. One of those like Jeep Wranglers where you can like zip the window. You don't even roll it. You zip it.
It's like a canvas.
So it's like, yeah. So it's like part convertible, part SUV. Just feels very open and free that I like about it.
You can go off-roading in that car.
Oh,
into
yeah.
Into the mountains, into nature.
Do it all in that Jeep.
Okay, I have an answer then. That's that inspired me. I feel like I would like a retro VW, those like little vans, those VW.
Oh, the VW bus.
Bus.
Yeah.
Thank you. Because I want a van life. I think that would be
Oh, so van fun. Life. Hashtag van life.
Hashtag van life. And then I can go off into the woods and be free. That would be great. I would love that.
Okay. It'd be two different experiences deep in the woods. Gar, were either of you involved in planning the 2013 E3 event at Best Buy? If I remember right, there were demos at some Best Buys across the country with newly released revealed games like Super Mario 3D World and Mario Kart 8. Going to that event with friends was one of my favorite Nintendo memories.
Oh, yeah.
That's a cool story. We were not directly involved in those, I think. You know, that part of E3 planning is like, there's so much going on. It sort of gets parceled out to different people. Mm-hmm. We certainly were aware of those. And yeah, there were a couple years where that was kind of one of the big new things that we were trying out to let people, you know, try out the games as they were announced. I don't recall them happening in a ton of different cities or a ton of different stores. So it felt a little bit limited that way, but it's cool to hear that you had such a good time at it.
Yeah, I think there was like this big aha moment that was kind of not really an aha moment, where when we were planning E3, everyone was like, wait a second. When we announce a game, people will get more excited if they can play it. And it's like, well, no, duh. Because, you know, our games are always very, like, Nintendo games, you do have to like try it out to really feel the magic of it sometimes. So I think that was like the big, like, oh yeah, we should definitely make these E3 demos that we had on the show floor more accessible, because not everybody can get into E3 or go to E3. And so that was sort of the big push to do it at some of those local retail stores. And I think Best Buy was that. And then they also, of course, had it at the Nintendo store in New York. So fans could go there. But yeah, I think that was a kind of a big part of E3 planning, was how do we make these exciting newly announced games available to as many people as possible.
I remember those were like very high effort events to make happen. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's interesting that there hasn't really been an evolution of this kind of thing beyond like making people physically go somewhere. Like, you know, again, we have all these systems that can download and play games and demos. Obviously an E3 demo is not necessarily representative of the final game, but I wonder if we'll ever get to that point where it's like you're watching the Nintendo Direct and then boom, now we've got, you know, this demo that you can play for like 48 hours or something and get a taste.
That's always the dream state, right?
It's right.
Like some sort of like cloud situation where as the announcements were coming, you're just seeing these games like automatically like pre-installed into your Switch or something, and then you
suggest it to somebody who actually knows how that would work, and they just laugh in your face.
They laugh because I think how it's working is like kind of backwards. It's like some hamster wheel, like someone's like running on it. It's not like a good system, you know. It's not modern. It's not modernized. But yeah, that would be the dream state for sure. I would love that.
All right. Here's another non-gaming question from Prince Charmless. Hi, Kit and Krista. Have you watched Turning Red yet? I'm excited for Moon Knight also. We should say we are recording this on Wednesday. I think Moon Knight is out now. I might be watching that tonight.
Yeah, I think I might try it tonight too. You and I both have no idea who this character is or like the background behind, but the trailer looks very mysterious. And so, yeah, I've been quite enjoying all of the Disney Plus like Marvel stuff. So I'll definitely be watching that. And yes, I have watched Turning Red and I love it. I thought it was such a cute movie. It spoke to me, of course, and reminded me of my youthful teenage years of being crazy for a boy band and hanging out with my friends. And there were so many moments like her with the Tamagotchi that was like, that is so me from my junior high years. And so yes, it definitely spoke strongly to me. I loved it. It was a great movie.
I'm a pretty big Marvel fan and have been for most of my life. I got to say, though, Moon Knight is just one of those characters where I have a big blind spot. Like, growing up, he was not very popular, so I didn't really have a reason to get into it. And obviously, there hasn't been a lot of Moon Knight stuff out there. But yeah, I've watched in like all of the Disney Plus Marvel stuff, so I'll definitely give it a shot. All right. This question is very long from your jury, so please settle in as I read it to you.
Oh boy.
I have a question regarding Smash Brothers and its character reveals. It's always been tricky to know to what degree Sakurai and the higher-ups chose them based on personal taste versus marketability or promoting a joint project. For example, Joker and especially Sephiroth didn't really act to market their main games coming to Switch, whereas Hero very obviously did. Was it ever made apparent to both of you internally when perhaps Nintendo's choices were being influenced by those factors? And also, what were the most notable reactions internally by Nintendo staff to the DLC picks for Ultimate? Most excited, shocked, confused, etc. I'll go first because I probably have a less informed answer than you do, because you worked very closely on Ultimate. which is I never heard of, you know, this sort of, you know, discussion. I think I always wondered myself of like, is there a bigger intention with this character? You know, does it signal that there's more on the way? But I was not privy to any of those. So I was just left in the speculation zone.
Yeah, the control over the secrecy of the information around Smash and the Smash reveals were some of the most like stressful situations that I've ever been in. And I was sort of the global marketing lead for Smash Ultimate, which again, story for another time, but nearly killed me because it was such a high pressure situation with so many factors. And it was, you know, honestly, just a really long campaign, you know, after the game launch.
Years.
Literally over two years of additional things were happening with these reveals. But, you know, what I kind of gleaned from the whole situation was that, like, Sakurai's going to do what he wants to do. That is really the, I think, the vibe of Smash is that, like, he's clearly in charge, as he should be. He's a genius, and he has a very clear vision for what he wants for this game to look like, who he wants to be in this game. He likely has, you know, I don't know this for sure, or like it's not like backed up by like facts, but I speculate that he has a lot of very key relationships with people in the industry and people that he likes to work with, and IP that he likes to work with from these people that end up in the game because that's what he likes. So, you know, I really think that's like driving most of the, you know, the decisions around which fighters get added to the game and what gets sort of surfaced. Certainly there are likely other factors like, is this character going to be able to cross over to other, you know, other games that's launching on Nintendo Switch, so on and so forth. But I really think Sakurai is calling the shots, and I don't think that there's many people that can argue with him. So he's in charge.
I think it's easy to, you know, assume that there's some grand plan that it's like, oh, well, if you do this, then this company is going to bring its game to Switch and it's going to be this big deal. But, you know, the one that I think confused me the most was Terry Bogard, because it's like, wow, that's not a super big character or franchise to be represented in your like tentpole DLC. So again, and it just seemed like that was a character that Mr. Sakurai liked and wanted to have in the game. So it happened. I remember we were, I think, flying home from a PAX East, and then the character leaked, and you were frantically freaking out, and I was just scratching my head. I'm like, huh, why Terry?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the leaks were really something. But yeah, that's a great example of something that is clearly a character that Mr. Sakurai probably grew up playing, you know, loving that character or playing that character, and is like, yeah, I want this in my game. And that's what it is, you know? In terms of internally, I feel like it was kind of fun for us internally, even though I complain about it being stressful. Like, we were as surprised as sometimes all of you were, because we would know obviously earlier than it's announced, but it would always be like a spectacle when they told us too. So we all had like, you know, that moment in the conference room where we're like, oh, that's the next one. Holy, oh God. You know, like we would have that moment too. So it was always fun to speculate. We guessed too, you know, there's like code names and stuff. So we would like guess like what that could be. And so it was fun. We'd like make bets. Like what character do you think is going to be this time? And so it was always like a fun time to also like kind of speculate along with you guys. And then when we finally found out, we were always like, oh, okay, that's interesting. But yes, 2 years of a very high stress situation. Glad it's over.
All right, this is our final question. So get hyped from VGM Life. Remember when Kirby was angry on the North America box covers, but cute on the Japanese ones? Any thoughts or inside baseball on that regional marketing difference? I think we had a couple questions kind of along these lines in the main episode, and I would definitely lump this in with that, which is, you know, this is one of those places where different regions have the freedom to make decisions that they think will help a game do better.
Yeah, exactly. I think every region has a pulse, hopefully, on their market and what you know, that audience in that market is going to like and dislike. So it's nice that there is sort of this flexibility to like, you know, customize something to each region. So yeah, I think that that's really what it is.
I guess. Yeah, it is. And you know, it seems like maybe the perception of Kirby specifically might be flipping, where it's like, oh, we have to position him as this, you know, secretly tough guy, but he's a pink blob, to maybe just embracing really what that character is, which I think is probably for the best in the long run.
Yeah, there was, I remember like a lot of discussions, like serious marketing discussions about like, how do we position Kirby as like cooler than this pink circle?
And there'd
like,
be research and there's research, all sorts of stuff that goes into it.
And there's like the tagline, remember that super tough pink puff tagline that they were like testing, A-B testing the taglines? It's like, oh my gosh, he's just what he is, like what a big. But yes, it's fun. It's all in good fun, I think.
But yeah, Angry Kirby definitely was in the meme zone for a few years there.
We love to hate it. Yeah. We love to love it.
All right. That is the end of the Hot Dozen.
That's it. We did it once again. Good questions, everyone.
Wonderful. Keep them coming. Keep it up.
We love these, and we love answering them and hearing from you guys.
So, yeah. So thanks for sticking along with us. Hope you have a great weekend, and we will be back with more good stuff next week. See you around.
Okay, bye.
Bye.